It is good to be back with you. It's kind of a special day in the life of your congregation, the sense of the earlier service, they did a very different thing looking at songs and how we sing songs differently throughout our life and throughout our days. And then today at this 11 o'clock service, we're going to kind of look at a story from maybe the 10,000 foot view of a familiar story. But hopefully it will be an invitation for you to see where you might be in that and how we might sing throughout our lives because of that perspective. And so hear these words. We'll be reading in Genesis, if you'd like to follow along. We'll begin in Genesis 37 and then kind of hit the end of the story in 45. And so hear these words from Genesis. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel, the other name of Jacob, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. And he made an ornate robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I've had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream. This time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you've had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flock near Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, "You know your brothers are grazing flocks near Shechem. Come, I'm going to send them to you." "Very well," he replied, and so he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him out from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they're grazing their flocks?" "Oh, they've moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went to his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of the cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue them from his hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing. They took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty and there was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat their meal. They looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay a hand on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." And the brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. And time transpires, he's in Egypt, and now the rest of the story. And we'll pick up in 45, verse 1. When Joseph could no longer control himself before his attendants, and he cried out, "Have everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But his brothers were unable to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me." When they had done so, he said, "I'm your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now don't be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been a famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will be no plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Let us pray. Gracious God, will you take the words of your servant's mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts? May they be acceptable in your sight, for you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Parenting is a funny thing, isn't it? And the process of going from one who is parented to parenting, it takes some reflection and maybe some trepidation. But I would think most of us who have become parents or about to become parents sit down at some point and kind of think through how we've been raised and make some conscious choices of what was good and maybe not so good and what we want to take into our life, our new role as being parents. For example, my husband and I both grew up in households where eating a family meal together was an important part of our life. And so we have made that a priority in our family. I joke now that my family, now that I'm not in full-time ministry, my family eats far less casseroles, because I used to just make a bunch of casseroles and Jack would pop them in the oven, and then when we was done with evening meetings, we would then eat. And so now they don't have that as much. On the flip side, you can also think of things that you don't want to take into your family. I dated a young man in college who was the son of an alcoholic. And this young man made a very conscious choice never to drink, because even though he didn't have kids yet, he was looking forward to being a father one day. And he never wanted his future children to experience what he had. And so he made a conscious choice not to drink. Now, unfortunately, there's another flip side to this. Oftentimes, we get into parenting and just do things that we don't consciously think about. And we just do them, because that's what you do. There's a popular parenting program called Love and Logic, and one of the founders of that makes the comment that one day he woke up and realized that his drill sergeant father was parenting his children, because he was doing exactly what he had seen modeled to him, he was then doing to his children, and he said, "Oh, I can't do that, I need a break." There are plenty of times that I wish Jacob had had the wherewithal to evaluate where he had come from and make some choices differently. Because you see, Jacob was brought up in the family. He was the youngest son. He had an older brother in him. And his older brother was like a guy's guy. He loved sports and the outdoors and hunting. And he was daddy's favorite. Now, Jacob liked being in the tents and being kind of a homebody. He liked just being around. I joke today that if he were born today, he would be in mommy's basement playing video games. And he was his mother's favorite. We're heading into Thanksgiving, and some of you, I'm sure, are like, "Oh, it's Thanksgiving. I wonder how this is going to go this year." You're not alone. Jacob, Esau, it was kind of a messy situation. And then you throw into that the birthright and the stealing of the blessing, and you kind of know the story. It was just messy. And so you wish Jacob had thought to himself, "Yeah, having favorites didn't really work out so well." And yet he didn't. And so, as most men would say, one wife is good enough, Jacob had two wives and then two other women who kind of served as wives. That wasn't good. But anyway, so into this situation and into this big family, the beloved wife of Jacob was named Rachel. And when she finally had a son, Joseph, all the attention and love was poured out onto Joseph. He was the favorite. And there was no denying it in the family. Everyone knew that Joseph was the favorite. And Joseph, we kind of get this view of him early on. He's a teenager, so we'll give him a little bit of grace, but, you know, kind of a brat, because he's out, you know, doing the family business with his half-brothers, and he comes back and he tattletales on them. You know what they were doing, Dad? And so that didn't go over well. And then Jacob gave his son this present. When we were in Sunday school, it was the coat of many colors, right? Joseph, the Technicolor dream coat. The term is only used one other time in Hebrew in 2 Samuel for a ceremonial robe. Our text called it ornate. Other translations will call it a coat with long sleeves. They were shepherding family. I think we could just label it the impractical coat of love. And so we have Joseph with this impractical rope of love, daddy's favorite, no doubt. And then into the mix, God starts giving him dreams. Now, most of you, probably like me, have some wacky ones. I've had some wacky dreams recently. I don't know if it's the weather changing or what's going on. And most of us just kind of laugh off our dreams. But they are a very legitimate form of communication from God. And the ancients truly thought that they were how God spoke, a primary way in which God spoke. Still today, some of you in this room probably have dreams that are legitimate. We have a close friend of ours who often dreams, and that's how God reveals things to her. Interestingly enough, my husband often has interpretation or insight onto her dreams, and so she'll call and, hey, I had another dream, and they talk through it. And so Joseph starts having dreams, very much in the context of their world. They're out binding sheaves of grain, his rises up, the others bow down, and then we've got the sun, moon, and the stars bowing down to him, and it just gets under the brother's skin that much more. Again, imagine Thanksgiving in their household. Okay, so they're out doing their business. Okay, so we're blessed with rain. Even though it doesn't rain, you know, we have sheep and goats, and you have to move them around to make sure that they can eat. And there was just kind of a normal trek that people would make from Hebron, where they are, you know, up to Shechem and then on to Dothan, which was actually on an international trade route. And so they're making this trek with the sheep and goats that they've got. If you know your Bibles well, you know that Jacob's family ran into a little bit of trouble with the Shechemites a couple chapters ago. And so it's not surprising that Joseph's hanging out with Dad, and Dad says, hey, you know, we probably should check on, make sure everything's going okay in the Shechemite region. And so Joseph gets sent out. And then there's kind of this interlude story where he's just wandering around and commentators aren't sure what to do with it. I think it just kind of gets to the cluelessness of teenager Joseph. Like, where are my brothers? I don't know where they are. Oh yeah, they went on to Dothan. Okay, so he goes up, and can you imagine the scene from far off? The brothers look up and they see Joseph. How do they know it's Joseph? Because he's hiking up his sleeves. Oh, his ornate rope stuck on something, and he's prancing around. And the brothers think to themselves, oh, golly, Ned, we have to deal with him. I thought he was going to stay at home. Shoot. And then you know how some harebrained idea gets started, and then suddenly it's the whole mob mentality takes over. You know, we could off him, and no one would know. It's just us. Yeah, let's do it. It seems like the final hours of Jesus' life, a few well-placed whispers, and then the whole crowd is shouting, crucify him. We know how mob mentalities take over. Thankfully, Reuben, the firstborn, bless you firstborns in the world who take responsibility for things. I'm the baby of the family. That wasn't me. But Reuben, the firstborn, says, wait a second, let's not kill him. Let's just throw him into the cistern. And so Joseph finally shows up. They disrobe him. They dethrone him as the favorite. They throw him in the pit. And then in one of the classic biblical lines, then they sit down to lunch. So can you imagine the scene? Guys. Hey, guys. Guys. Hey, you can't do this to me. You just wait until I tell Dad on you. Guys, and they're just, can I have another pita? It's great. Can you see it? And then the murderer's thoughts get transposed, and they look up and they say, hey, we can make some money out of this deal, as they see the traders come through. So they whip him out, they sell him for pieces of silver, and he's on his way to Egypt. And they think, but what was God's perspective on what's going on? What do we know about who God has made Joseph to be? Well, he gave him two dreams to really get at the heart of who Joseph is. That he was one who was going to lead, who was going to stand and others would bow down to. So he had some sort of skills, ability, administrative skills to be able to stand while others bowed down to him. But here's the deal. Those skills, those abilities would have never come to the surface if he had stayed in Canaan with his family, with a father who doted on him and brothers who despised and dismissed him. And so in some ways, God had to get him out of that and put him into a completely different environment in which those skills came to the surface and who God made Joseph to be could really come to the surface. And unless you're thinking, where is she coming up with this? This is what leads me to believe it. So he gets to Egypt and he gets sold into the house of Potiphar, who's a guy in the Pharaoh government system. And he's a young man, you know, 17, 18 years old. And what happens? Potiphar puts him in charge of some things, and then he puts him in charge of more things and more things. And eventually, Joseph is running the household. Because Potiphar, it says that Potiphar recognizes that the Lord is with him. I don't honestly think that he recognizes some foreign god's influence in Joseph's life. I think he just recognized, hey, this kid's got some skills and abilities. I'm going to use them. And so he puts him in charge of his household. And things are running very, very smoothly. Things are going well. And Joseph, parts of Joseph are coming to the surface that would have never come to the surface if he had stayed in Canaan at home. Well, you know, Joseph was a young man, nice looking, ran into a bit of trouble with Potiphar's wife. She falsely accused him of a crime, and oop, he gets whipped off to prison. And again, what happens when he's in prison? Well, he starts being in charge of other prisoners because the guard recognizes that Joseph has skills and abilities, who God made Joseph to be, was to lead. And so when some two years later, the wine steward remembered, when I was in prison for a couple of days, Pharaoh, I know you just had a scary dream, but hey, there was this guy in prison, and he interpreted my dream correctly. Maybe he can help you. And they whipped Joseph out of prison, and they put him in front of Pharaoh. And he says, yeah, you got to get your house in order because you're going to have years of plenty and then years of famine. And Pharaoh goes, I need a guy who can do it, and you're the guy. It's not surprising because God had been working on Joseph, giving him opportunities to be in charge, to be in a role of leadership, even in the midst of bad circumstances. Now, please, I want to be very, very clear. Selling your brothers into slavery is wrong. Falsely accusing someone of a crime is wrong. And yet, God allowed those circumstances. And so we need to look at our own lives. What has God allowed to flow into our lives? Some of it may be wrong. There are things that are wrong. Murder, rape. There are things that are wrong. And yet God can allow things into our lives so that pieces of us, who God made us to be, can come to the surface. And we just need that perspective. Marianne read from Romans, for God can work together all good, for God can work together good for all things, for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. It doesn't say that God's going to give you all good things. oh my goodness, I wish that were the case. But God says that he can work together good for all things. Because God has this amazing ability. He really needs us to be who he created us to be. And so he gives us life circumstances. And so that those things can come to the surface. So we can be unpacked on who God made us to be. And so God allows circumstances, the good and the bad and the ugly, to come into our worlds so that we can be molded and shaped and fashioned into who he needs us to be, not just for our sake, but for the community, for our church, for our city. And it was Joseph who had that perspective at the end of his life. Because when his brothers came, let's face it, he was in a position of power. When they asked for grain in the midst of a famine, he could have said, ha, do you remember you sold me into slavery? Off to prison you go. And I think most of us would understand that he would be justified in that. And yet he had God's perspective. He was able to say, you sold me into slavery, but God meant it for good, to save not only a nation, but also the remnant of people. And so in some ways, this story of Jesus, these Joseph stories are an invitation for us to look at our lives. I think most of us can think about our lives and think going through some good, some bad, and some ugly times. And yet, I bet if you think about your life, you've gone through something, and then either 2 months later, 5 years later, 50 years later, God brings someone else into your life, maybe who's going through a similar circumstance, and you are able to be there for them in a way that you would have never been there. Or perhaps you can sit there and think back through your life and think, the person that I am today is really shaped because of experiences X, Y, and Z. And to see that that was God's hand in that. I know the woman you see standing here was profoundly shaped. One incident in my life, my mom died when she was 54, I was 23. The woman you see standing here would not be here if that had not occurred. When people show up to my house to buy eggs and they're going through rough times, their wife is dying of cancer, I am able to speak and pray for them in a way because I've gone through a similar experience. And so I would invite you to look at your life and the experiences, especially the good and the bad and the ugly ones, and think, okay, God allowed that into my life. I'm not sure why, but give me your perspective, God. Because it happened, so I'm going to trust that you were in it. Now, there's one key piece to this, I think, that is very important to bring out and is modeled in Joseph's life and is modeled in Jesus' life. And that is the sense of forgiveness. When the brothers showed up and Joseph revealed himself, he did not have bitterness or anger. If you know the story, there was a bit of drama before he actually reveals himself to his brothers, and I think he was wrestling with what to do with his brothers, these brothers who had sold him into slavery. But in the end, I think he extended grace and forgiveness to them. Jesus, his final minutes, or final hours, and they're nailing him to the cross. And he says, Father, forgive them. They do not know what they're doing. Because he had a wider perspective that what they were doing is they thought they were killing a man. He saw it that it was going to open a door. His death was going to open a door for reconciliation between people and the God, their Father. So he was able to forgive them and extend forgiveness. When we look back at these bad and ugly times of our lives, if we hold on to bitterness, that becomes the focus, and it almost inhibits us from being able to see what God might have been doing in these circumstances. Some things are wrong, yes, but God allowed them. And so sometimes we need to pray, God, help me to let go of this, to forgive. And then when you start that process, then you can begin to see the ripple effects of what has come out of that for your good and for the good of the community. Joseph was a dreamer whose life turned into a nightmare. But when he started to see it from God's perspective, he understood that it was for life, it was for the good of many. And so I invite you to look at your lives and to see things from God's perspective, to celebrate who you are because of what God has allowed in your life, and to embrace that good and take that good beyond here. For God's glory, amen.